Blog Talk Radio.
Janeway, Spock, Spear, Locker's acting very weird. Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife. Boimler, Tendi's dog, Ransom is very hard. Spore Drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. Teacher bad left, Edward is an idiot, Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kempak sat, Q has had enough of that. Beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We talk about the series, you can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the series, we're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about the series,
God, I just love that song. It always gets me in the mood for Trek Talking, and that's what we're doing tonight. We're Trek Talking. It's Thursday night. We're live. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. And guess what, guys? The wait is over. If you're in the United States or Canada, the wait is over and Star Trek Discovery has hit, and we are going to talk about it, spoilers and all, but not till the end of the show. So you got time to run over, have some dinner, get some chicken wings, have some pizza, whatever, and then give us a call and talk about Discovery. It's going to be great. But first, we have to talk about Prodigy. We have last week's episode of Prodigy and the one that was on tonight. And that will put us right up the schedule. We'll be right up back on our normal schedule. There will be no show next week because it's Thanksgiving here in the United States. So we'll be talking about episode 2 of Discovery the Thursday after Thanksgiving. So that's what's going to be going on. I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim. And with me as usual are my Trexperts. And we'll start out with Eric. He's out in Portland. How you doing tonight, Eric?
I am doing very, very good. We are having a nice rainy day here in Portland, and I feel like I have absolutely gorged on Star Trek over the last 2 days, and it has been quite a good time.
Oh, it's been awesome. It's a Trekkie's dream. Trek. It's great. I even watched the Ready Room. So, yeah, it's exciting. And we also have with us Charles. Charles is out in Las Vegas. How are you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good. Since we won't get a chance at the end, I thought I'd bring up something interesting I did over the past weekend that you saw some pictures of. We had a special event called Construction and Cancer. And it was a event where kids could come in and play on different vehicles, construction vehicles. We had a older bus, we had California Highway Patrol, we had SWAT truck, all kinds of stuff. The kids got to go. Well, it was sponsored by a, I forgot the group. It's a Comic-Con group that dresses up, and they invited other people to come join them. So several of us from the USS Windrunner and a few from the Hyperion all came in Star Trek uniform and wandered awesome. Around getting pictures with everybody. We got a whole group picture. We had so many. We had Marvel heroes. We had DC heroes. Some Jack was running around. We had a couple princesses. We had so many people in costume, cosplaying, running around. It was so much fun. But if I get a chance, I'll try getting that picture posted.
Now, did you wave your bat lift around and everybody wanted to come over and touch it?
I don't have a bat lift. I was actually carrying a Starfleet flag.
Well, that works.
And I did have somebody come over and steal my flag. The mascot, local AAA baseball team at one point came by and took the flag away from me. He won the picture, but I wasn't there.
You got to watch those pesky Area 51 aliens. They'll do that to you.
It wasn't an alien. It was a duck.
A duck.
Was
his name Howard?
We're aviators now, not aliens.
Ah, yes.
That sounds really cool, wow. Charles. It sounds super duper cool.
That does sound fun. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah,
so,
guys,
you can look us up on Facebook at Trek Talking and Beyond. Spell that all out. Head on over there. Give us a like. Give us a follow. You'll never miss a podcast. All of the podcasts are posted there. You'll get a notification in your email, so you'll never miss us. So go over there and check that out. We have 74,088 followers as of showtime. Just let that sink in, Eric.
It's amazing. Jim, we just hit 60, like, I don't even know, like 3 or 4 weeks ago? I don't know what's going on here. The support for our podcast right now is unbelievable. It just makes our hearts all warm and fuzzy.
And 51,605 downloads.
So, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. That's a lot of listeners.
And before we get into the show, though, there's something I want to talk about a little bit here. I have to admit, I don't know a lot about it because I live here. I'm in Vermont, the United States. Eric is in the United States. Charles is in the United States. And even GM Chris is in Canada. So I don't know the ins and outs and intricacies of this whole situation, but I am humbled. I am so humbled that so many people of the 74,088 fans think that I have some type, that our podcast has some type of pull or say over what happens in Star Trek. None of us work for Paramount at all. None of us have any connection in any way, shape, or form to Paramount. And none of us have anything to do with international viewing rules and laws and lockouts or any of that. So, you know, sending me nasty notes about why I won't let you watch Discovery, I'm very, very sorry that you can't. And if it was up to me, I would let everybody in the world watch it any time they wanted because I'm not into – I think all this blackout and regional stuff is all a bunch of crap anyways. You know, as many people as want to watch a show or a sporting event should be allowed to. And I'm not a lawyer, so I don't understand why that is. But I'm with you guys. I am truly with you. I feel your pain that you cannot watch Discovery, but I have nothing to do with it. Zero. Zip. In fact, if Paramount called me up right now, if they're listening to this podcast, they'd call me up, I'd say, let them watch it. Let them all watch it. Okay?
Yeah, and Jim, just for any listeners who don't know what we're talking about, we just kind of recently learned, I think it was today or maybe yesterday, about the fact that they were pulling Discovery off of some of these places like Netflix that international viewers can see this show. So it feels like everybody was kind of blindsided by this, and we totally sympathize with you. We wish you could watch it because it's ridiculous. I mean, right? You were all geared up to watch it, and all of a sudden you're not able to, and there was no warning. So just know that you have our condolences, our support, and man, we wish things could be different for you all.
If I could download the episodes onto our Facebook page so that you guys could watch them, I would do it tomorrow, but Facebook won't allow me. I can't help you. I am so sorry for that. And we here at this podcast have nothing to do with that. So all the nasty emails that I've been getting about how we could do this to you and you're not going to follow our page because of this and you're not going to listen to the podcast. We have nothing to do with it. And I apologize that you can't watch it, but we're just fans like you. So just bear that in mind that, you know, me and Charles and Eric, we're just Star Trek. We're just Trekkies. Just like you. So we're nothing
as
special.
As you can tell by, you know, Jim's cat occasionally jumping on his head or the train occasionally rolling by in the background of my you know, home booth here. So yeah.
Yeah, we're just people, and also I just want to say that I know it's easy to say because we watched it, but I've been pointing out to people on Facebook all day long. You remember a couple of months ago when they pulled all the Star Trek movies off Paramount Plus? We had a story. We talked about it on this podcast. I think it was 3 months ago, Eric, you read that story?
Yeah, it was probably 2 or 3 months ago where they had finally all come on, and then they pulled a bunch of them off. Yeah.
They pulled them all off because of international licensing rights and blah, blah, blah. And then there was no – Star Trek movies were not on Paramount Plus. And then a month later, what happened? They're all there. They're there to stay, and they're not going anywhere. They're all available on Paramount Plus, period. And I just want to preface this by saying I don't have a crystal ball, and I have no connection at all with Paramount Plus or any of this. But from a business point of view, Paramount owns Star Trek, and they want to be the home of Star Trek. That's what's driving Paramount Plus right now, are you guys, are us, Star Trek fans. They know that, and they don't want to alienate you guys and piss us all off. That's the last thing that they want to do. However, getting back to the thing that I'm not a lawyer, they have all these contracts out there, and none of us knows what these contracts are all about or what they specify or any of that. But I honestly think that if you sit back and be patient and wait for the lawyers to work all of this out, you will see that Paramount Plus will be the home of all Star Trek all the time from this point on. And that's what they're after, and that's what's going to happen. And when all the dust settles, you will be able to watch Star Trek for $5.99 a month on any device, at any time, any show, any movie. And that really is the end game. And
that's in the United States, Jim, because I think what Paramount needs to work out here is if they want Paramount Plus to be the home, they also have to figure out how to get Paramount Plus to all these international countries. I mean, so many of our listeners come from Europe, come from Africa, come from Malaysia, come from all over the world. And so many of these places are the places right now that the Paramount Plus there isn't $6 a month and doesn't offer them Star Trek, you know? So that's the frustrating part of it right now is they don't even have an option. They're like, nope,
yeah,
UK won't see it for a year. I mean, come on.
I think they're going to work. I think they're going to work it out.
I really hope they do.
I think they, because they're putting a lot of money. The last time I heard, it was $6 million an episode to produce Discovery. I have no idea what it costs for Picard. I don't know what it's costing them for Strange New Worlds, which we have not even seen yet. We have Prodigy and we have Lower Decks, and you know, they want to get this out to as many fans as possible. So, you know, it's not in their best interest to say that Joe in Iraq can't watch Star Trek. It's just not in their best interest. But it has to be worked out legally.
Yeah, it's got to be complex, right? Working with all these different countries and all their different rules and that kind of stuff. And I'm sure as big as a movie studio as Paramount Plus is, there's got to be some hurdles that they're jumping over, and hopefully they are. I agree with you, Jim. I think they want this to be available everywhere for everybody. And some of their contracts are just running out. I don't know if this one with Netflix recently here was planned. The timing of that was really unfortunate, where I think I read somewhere that the Netflix license ran out like 2 days before the premiere of Discovery. So all these international listeners, particularly the ones in the UK I was following, said, you know, they were gearing up for watching the show, and then all of a sudden they weren't going to be able to watch the show. So that was a bummer, and hopefully they get it corrected soon here.
I hope that they do, and I have faith that eventually it will. They said 2022, and that's of 2022 technically is just a few weeks away. We're going into Thanksgiving, then we're going to be going into Christmas, then it's New Year, so 2022 isn't that far off, and I really think they're going to get it for you guys. I really do. They want you to watch their product, and I think they're going to do everything in their power to get it to you. I just don't know when. unfortunately. And trust me, if we find out anything, we'll get it posted on our Facebook page and we'll talk about it right here on this show. So that's – you guys want to add anything about this before we move on?
I'm good, nope, man.
I think that's it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not much we can do.
Yep. We're just a bunch of Star Trek fans, so I apologize. And stop sending me hate mail. I have no control over
it. We really just want the hate mail to stop.
if I could push a magic button and beam Star Trek to every single one of you guys, you would
awesome.
Be watching it right now. I swear.
And trust me, I know Jim, he would. He definitely would.
I have no problem. I would post it right on our Facebook page for all of you to watch. But Facebook would block it. YouTube would block it. So I apologize. Anyways, it's not our fault, and I just wanted to move on from that, okay? Because I'm tired of getting these messages and trying to defend ourselves. We have nothing to do with it. So anyways, without any further ado, speaking of our international listeners, we're going to talk about fan shout-outs. And to get your name mentioned in a fan shout-out, all you need to do is head over to our Facebook page, Trek Talking and Beyond, and you'll see the Live Long and Prosper pinned to the top of the page. Just stop there and tell us where you're listening from. And every week I pick out 15 lucky listeners. If you see a heart next to your name from Trek Talking, that means yours truly, Uncle Jim, has chosen you, and your name will be mentioned in a future fan shout-out. So, Eric, who is on your list for fan shout-outs this week?
Ooh, we are front-loaded with some excellent places, names, and countries. Giving shout-out first, number one, to Renee Arpad from Schagen in North Holland, the Netherlands. Renee, thank you for listening to us. That's so cool. We always have so many listeners from the Netherlands, and I looked up where Schagen is. It looks like it's a fine little place to live. I would love to visit. The Netherlands seems like a fascinating country to me. So thank you for listening to us and supporting our podcast. Top fan, Jerome Vandervos from, and man, this is a good one. Jim always gives me the good ones.
Did I get you?
This one is maybe, I'm going to go with Sahirenberg, also in the Netherlands, at the border with Germany. Such an interesting way of spelling it. It's apostrophe S dash and then Hirenberg. So, Jerome Vandervos, we're fascinated with your language, and we really, really appreciate your support of our podcast. And you're a top fan, so you interact with us quite a bit on our Facebook page, and we really appreciate that. Thank you very much. We're saying hello this week and saying thanks a bunch to Maruz Nowak in Poland, who gives us a nice live long and prosper hand online there. Thank you so much for listening, Maruz. Also saying hello to Julie Ann Krawczyk-Ernstberger. There you go. What do you think about that, Jim? I nailed that one. And this person lives in Bay City, Michigan.
I saw that, and then I saw Bay City, Michigan. I didn't even pay attention. I just saw the name, and I said, I'm going to get him with this one.
It's great. I feel like I can follow the family lineage here, just growing up in the Midwest and understanding some of these last names. So Julie Ann Krawczyk-Ernstberger. I hope I got that all right. Thank you for listening to us from Bay City, Michigan. And final on my list is hello and thank you so much to Karen Kepp-Radke in Erfstadt, Germany. Erfstadt, Germany. Thank you so much, Karen, for listening to us. Charles, who's on your list this week?
Well, let's start off with Thomas Timmerman from Maryland, USA. Then we got Marilyn McCorn from Delaware. Mark W. Pitt from Perth, Western Australia. Top fan Ken Jeffries from Surrey, UK. And James Fisk from Aldonia, South Australia. Jim, any
excellent
New Yorkers?
I'm not sure. There might be. First of all, we'd like to say hello and thank you to Conrad Scholstrom from Nebraska and Chris Rideout from Newfoundland and Labrador. Pretty cool. Top fan, Wendy Warnowski from Victoria, British Columbia in Canada, up in GM Chris's neck of the woods, I do believe, right?
Other end of the country, nope. Actually, it's way closer to me, and I will tell you that Victoria is one of my favorite places I've ever been in my life. It is so beautiful there, you guys. It's like Cape Cod on steroids. It's really, really nice.
But nowhere near GM, Chris.
Not at all, but it's about six hours north of me, and you got to take a boat to get there.
Oh, cool. And we'd also like to say thank you for listening to Francis Van Deen from New Hampshire, not too far from me, about a couple hours drives. And guess what? We do have somebody from New York on my list, Christopher Wietak from Rochester, New York. So those are our fan shout-outs for this week. Please, guys, thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. And if you'd like to hear your name on a fan shout-out, just head over to our Facebook page, and you know what to do. So now it's time for our Star Trek birthdays.
That was not a Klingon song.
All right, guys, we always start out our Star Trek birthdays remembering those members of our Star Trek family who, sadly enough, are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to Eric.
Yeah, Jim, this week we're going to be remembering seven people who would have had birthdays this week. Our first one is actor Hal Lynch, who played Staff Sergeant, he was not given a name, in TOS's episode Tomorrow is Yesterday. That's the one of the travel back in time episodes where they go to the military base and shenanigans ensue. So Hal Lynch played the Staff Sergeant in that episode, and Hal would have had a birthday this week. Happy birthday. And remembrance is going out to Hal and his family. We're also remembering this week Jake Dengel, one of two Ferengi on our list. This one is Mordok from TNG's episode The Last Outpost, which what's special about Ferengi in that episode, Jim?
Well, first of all, they had the whips, which we never saw again. We just saw them once, and never saw them again, which was an interesting weapon, actually, if you think about it. It wasn't a phaser, but it shot a phaser beam, and it coiled like a whip. I thought that was a cool idea. But
I thought that was pretty cool. And the Ferengi were a little bit different back then. They were a little bit more skulky, a little bit more hunched over.
They wore like leather skins type, like pelts type of
furs. Yeah.
Yep, and they were kind of monkeys.
They were supposed to be more kind of the new enemy. And instead of having our Romulans and the Klingons, they thought they'd bring the Ferengi in as the new enemy. And it didn't quite turn out to being the new enemy because we, especially from DS9, rather liked the Ferengi after that.
That's right, and I think they sort of figured him out a little bit later in TNG, but Jake Dengel was one of the folks playing Mordok who got to kind of lay the groundwork for what would become the Ferengi of the future. So happy birthday to Jake, and thank you so much for all the work he did there playing Mordok. We're also saying happy birthday this week to William Bastini, who played Omog, yet another Ferengi, in TNG's Unification, and this was a little bit different of a Ferengi. This is one of the, shall I say, gluttonous Ferengis that we see. Most of the Ferengis we see are kind of skinny and skulky. This one was big and beefy and definitely had a little bit of a different demeanor to him, and I really liked his character. I thought it was great.
He didn't like Klingon opera.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah. Well, happy birthday to William Bastiani. William Bastiani would have had a birthday this week playing Omog. We're also saying happy birthday to Brian Keith, who played the character of Mulibok in DS9's Progress, a Bajoran, an elder Bajoran in that episode. Great job playing that character. We're also saying happy birthday this week to Ellen Albertini Dow, who played Felissa Howard in TNG's Sub Rosa, the creepy old lady.
I just watched that episode yesterday.
It's a great episode, and man, she is scary, scary, scary in that episode. And And she's such a famous actress. If you look up her career, she goes back and she's got other things that she was in way back in time. So happy birthday to Ellen Albertini Dow. We're also saying happy birthday this week to Thalmas Rasulala, who played Captain Donald Verrilli in TNG's Contagion. Not an admiral, but Verrilli was kind of a really interesting character, I thought. He was presented with some problems that he had to solve along the way here. I just really enjoyed him in that role and the way he interacted with Picard and such. So happy birthday to Thalmas Rasulala. And our final remembrance this week goes out to Richard Hale, who played the tribal elder Goro in TOS's episode The Paradise Syndrome, the sort of what people think of as the Native American episode of TOS.
Oh.
So,
yep.
Yes, sir. Yeah. So there you go. Happy birthday to Richard Hale. Charles, did you have something to add to that?
Nope. That was a good episode, especially with the Traveler.
Yeah.
Third and final episode with the Traveler.
This is the TOS Paradise Syndrome, the one way back in the TOS days. Yep, the other one. But I know which one you're talking about. Yep. So happy birthday to Richard Hale. And that closes out our remembrances for this week for those who have gone before us who would have had birthdays. So Charles, let's kick off the people who are still with us that have birthdays this week.
Sorry, I was listening to you talk and kind of looking through my list, trying to sort it and figuring out how to sort it. So let's start off with Mary Linda Rapley, who played Irene Gallium in TOS's The Way of Eden. Robert Brown played Lazarus in TOS's The Alternative Facts.
And Robert Brown, I'm just going to say, playing Lazarus and the fact that he is still alive, I just think that there is some cool, like, synergy to that, honestly. He's amazing.
I had to look that up to verify that, to make sure what list to put him on, and he's still alive.
He is.
I can't believe all the TOS that I have.
There's a bunch in TOS this week. It's really fun.
You got a really good TOS one,
too.
I was gonna take it, but I gave it to you for a particular reason.
I know. Maggie Threat played Ruth in TOS's Mud Women. Margaret Reed played Dr. Servoa on TNG's Force of Nature. Deborah Strang played Lieutenant Talar in TOS 9's Rules of Engagement. And then one I know why Jim gave me, a second one I'm surprised Jim gave me. And it's hard to decide which order to do these two in, but I'll do them in the order that I put them in. First, we want to say a big happy birthday and kapwa to Guinan from TNG in the movies, Whoopi Goldberg.
Yep.
And Picard to come.
Have not heard
yeah, and
yet,
Picard.
But we rumor that her, and the rumor that she will, somewhere she will be in Picard. And then the one that Jim talked about, one more TOS. And that is a very big happy birthday to Bobby Clark. Fans may say, well, wait a minute, who was Bobby Clark? If you follow the Star Trek cons and have been to them, you may have very well met Bobby Clark. And sometimes he actually brings his head with him. Bobby Clark was one of the people who played the Gorn in TOS's Arena. He is the one that takes the credit for that episode.
And thanks to Charles, I have an autographed Gorn bobblehead that's sitting right here in front of me on my computer, thanks to Charles.
Cool. That is
awesome.
That is not a bobblehead.
Oh.
That is a Funko
not,
Pop. It is not a bobblehead.
Funko.
Right.
It is a Funko Pop, and he has a book.
Yes. Signed by Bobby Clark. So that's pretty cool. That's why I gave Bobby Clark to you instead of me.
Because I got to actually meet and talk to him.
Thank you, Charles, for covering for Jim, who was sick at the time and was unable to travel all the way to L.A. as he had planned. That was a big, big bummer for Jim, and Charles saved the day.
Wait. You're sending Jim to L.A.?
Or
Las Vegas.
Sorry. I said L.A.
Oh, talk about people getting old today.
I'm telling you.
Well, I'll tell you that everybody around me, Charles, calls anything east of Idaho out east. So that to me is, okay, I guess it's out east. Nebraska.
Nebraska. Well, listen, guys, we're not done yet. We still have a lot more to cover, but we have to take our very first commercial break of the evening. When we come back, I'm going to finish up our Star Trek birthdays. I got a couple of really good ones. And we're going to dive into the convention calendar. So run to the microwave, get those chicken wings, and don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jamie from Trek Talking, here to invite you to join us for the best sci-fi themed podcast. Our elite team of Trek-sperts are here to discuss Star Trek and sci-fi themed content. Call 646-668-2433 Thursday nights from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Coast Time. We can't wait to hear from you. Live long and prosper.
And we're back. And Jamie might be joining us a little bit later. She's watching Discovery right now, and she might give us a call to talk with us about it a little bit later. We'll see. All right, back to our Star Trek birthdays, guys. I'm starting off with saying happy birthday to Bob Gunton, who played Captain Benjamin Maxwell in TNG's The Wounded. Boy, was that a good episode.
So good.
He was absolutely correct. The Cardassians were up to no good. But he kind of went around it the wrong way. But he had all the good intentions. But
and he can't help he's wounded. He was wounded.
But you know what was great about that? Jean-Luc Picard kind of faced down Gull Evic. The end. He knew. He knew what he was doing. He knew that Maxwell was correct. He knew that they were illegally running weapons, and he knew that Evic knew it, and he just kind of faced him. He was like, look, dude, we know what's going on. You know what's going on. I know that you know that I know. We all know that each other knows, so, what are you going to do about it?
Political drama. I love it.
Yeah, it was really well played by Jean-Luc. So good episode. And we got to hear O'Brien sing, engineer in all of Starfleet. The minstrel boy.
Multi-talented guy.
Yep. So happy birthday to Bob Gunton. We'd also like to say happy birthday to J.C. Brandy, who played Marta, our Marty, in the TNG episode Papistry. But she has a tie to Picard, too. Dun, dun, dun. Anybody remember?
The tie to Picard. I am not bringing it up right now. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Is this the episode? Oh, Tapestry is the one about the where Picard gets stabbed, right? It's like young Picard. That's the one.
Yes, and on Star Trek Picard, Rios mentions
right.
Yeah, he mentions her by name and says yes, Captain Bandios owes him a favor. And at the time, I was like, what does that mean? Well, that is Captain Picard. Well, I want to say girlfriend, but that's this woman that was in the Tapestry episode that went to the academy with Captain Picard. And they name dropped her on Star Trek Picard. So that was a pretty cool little tie-in. Because we got to see what would have happened had Picard actually spent the night with her, what would have happened. In reality, he never did, but in that episode, he did.
Yeah.
And his life turned out quite differently. So happy birthday to J.C. Brandy.
Science Officer Picard, right?
Yep. And she also has the distinction of being killed off by Michael Myers in Halloween 6. for any horror fans out there.
There you go.
Michael Myers, who also wears a Captain Kirk mask, so you could say that Captain Kirk killed Captain Picard's girlfriend.
Oh my gosh, I love it. I love it.
So anyways, all kinds of ties here. So happy birthday to J.C. Brandy. We also like to say happy birthday to Max Goranicek, who plays Grand Nagus Rom on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Great guy. And the next one is another. We have a lot of Ferengi on the birthday list this week.
We do, and a lot of heavy hitters. Hitters. Yeah. Oh, this particular one is
inconceivable.
Particularly inconceivable.
yeah. So we want to say happy birthday to Wallace Shawn, who played Grand Nagus Zek on Deep Space Nine. He made Rom the Grand Nagus when he took off with Moogie. And it's inconceivable that he would do that, but he did.
And for anybody who doesn't know, Jim finally, what was it, Jim, 6 months ago? Finally.
Yeah, yep.
Finally saw Princess Bride for the first time. Congratulations,
yep,
Jim.
Never saw it. It's inconceivable that someone could be not have seen that, but I didn't.
That is true.
I have now. That's right. I always save the Klingons for last, right? That's just a tradition. That's just something that that I do, right? Yeah, we just do it that way.
That's true.
So
that's true.
I have a Klingon here for you guys. Stefan Root, who played Captain Kabata in the TNG episode Unification. He's the guy that flew Picard and Data to Vulcan so that they could look for Spock. And he's the one that told Data that the Romulan girls would lick that paint right off your ears. That was him. So happy birthday to... And we have a very special one here tonight, right now. I wouldn't be here right now doing this podcast if it wasn't for this next person. It seems to me like I've known him my whole life, but he'll be the first one to point out that's not true. I met him back in 1991 when I did my very first Star Trek convention. He was but a fan who came strolling through the door. Later on, I got to know him better. He became a good friend of mine. He was there at my wedding. He was there for the birth of Jamie. And it seems like I've known him forever, but I really haven't. Only maybe 25 years, 26 years I've known him. He called me up one day and he said, "Hey, I'm going to be talking about Star Trek on my podcast, and I'd like you to come on with me." And I said, "Podcast? What are you talking about? I don't know about podcasts. I can't do a podcast. I've never done a podcast." And he said, "Oh, it's easy. You'll be fine." And I came on his podcast, and at the time it was called the Masters of Disaster podcast. And our Star Trek podcast was huge. I started coming on with him to do a Star Trek segment every week. And guess what? Here I am on Trek Talking, 15 years later, going strong with over 70,000 people following us on our Facebook page because of that first podcast. And you guys may know him. Well, you know what? Yeah, I'll wait till a second. You guys may know him as the Admiral. He comes on this podcast from time to time, but his actual name is Ken Swenson. And he's responsible for getting me hooked on podcasts. So I have to say happy birthday to Ken, and thank you so much to the Admiral. And as always, we're going to send out this very special Weird Al Yankovic birthday greeting to Admiral Ken, if it'll play.
Well, there's a punk in the alley, and he's looking for a fight. There's an Arab on the corner buying everything in sight. There's a mother in the ghetto with another mouth to feed. That everywhere you look today, there's misery and greed. I guess you know the earth is going to crash into the sun, but that's no reason why we shouldn't have a little fun. So if you think it's scary, if it's more than you can take, just blow out the candles and have a piece of cake. Happy birthday! Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday!
Draw on it!
So happy birthday, Ken. We're thinking about you tonight. And I just want to add to that one more thing. My life has been so enriched through my involvement with Star Trek. I have met so many great people, like both of you guys, whom I've never met, but I've been talking to for years on this show.
So wild.
I wish I could have gone out to see the Picard premiere and met you guys in person, but I've been talking to you guys for years on this show. And so many people that I've met at conventions and cosplay events and things of that nature, that my involvement in Star Trek, yep, and Shannon as well, that's right. I never met Shannon either, but you guys have. And Star Trek is just such has enriched my life in so many ways. So I love Star Trek, and I love all of you guys, so. And I'm getting all emotional. Anyways, so let's move on. Let's move on. So it's time for...
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. So it's time for convention. Calendar. All right, there's our convention calendar intro, and that means it's time for conventions. Any of the conventions that we're about to talk about and mention on this podcast, I recommend that you get in touch with the hotel or the event location for any information on how to purchase tickets or find out who the guest stars are. All right, guys, that's what I would do because we just don't have the time to read it all off. So if you live in any of these areas and you're interested, call the hotel or the convention center for any future information. So first off, I want to tell you guys about Starbase Indy 2021, November 26th through 28th at the Marriott East Indianapolis in Indianapolis, Indiana. In fact, I think Shannon's going to be at that one, if I remember correctly, so you guys can meet Shannon. She's going to be there. We'd also like to tell you guys about Comic-Con Special Edition 2021, November 26th through 28th at the San Diego Convention Center in San Diego, California. Oz Comic Con Melbourne 2021, November 27th through 28th. And excellent. We're going to get to Shannon in just a minute. Oz Comic Con Melbourne 2021, November 27th through 28th at the Melbourne Convention Center and Exhibition Center in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. We also have QuadCon in Omaha 2021. November 27th and 28th at the Oakview Mall in Omaha, Nebraska, and Southwest Florida Con Fall Edition, November 28th, 2021 at the Crown Plaza Fort Myers at Bell Tower Shops in Fort Myers, Florida. And we do have Shannon on the phone right now, and we're going to talk to Shannon. Hey, Shannon, can you hear us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Absolutely. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Starbase Indy?
Well, it'll actually be the first time I've been to it. I've been trying to go for a couple of years, well, even before COVID. It's a smaller convention. But like Tracy Coco is going to be there. Muhammad Noor is going to be, but he's kind of busy with, you know, the whole being on Star Trek thing. So it's more like a family event. Like scientists come and talk about stuff. Anybody can come, like, volunteer to do a speech, so I'm doing one. So I think it should be fun. And it'll be my first, you know, con since before COVID. So I'm so excited.
And we had Tracy on the podcast, and she was mm-hmm. just a hoot to talk to. So I can only imagine how awesome she is in person. She'd probably mm-hmm. be cracking
she
you
is.
Up with her. She's just funny. I liked her a lot.
Well,
so
I actually met her at the Picard
can...
premiere.
Mm-hmm.
See, you can throw that in my face. Keep throwing that in my face.
No, I'm saying, but thank you so much for giving me tickets. I'm sorry you couldn't come.
I wanted to so bad.
I know.
So anyways, Eric, why don't you continue on our convention calendar.
You bet. Our next convention is in Comic-Con Germany 2021, November 27th through the 28th at the end of this month here in Landemesse, Stuttgart, Germany. We're also tracking Emerald City Comic-Con 2021, December 2nd through the 5th in Seattle, Washington at the Washington State Convention Center. German Comic Con Dortmund Winter Edition 2021, December 3rd through 5th, 2021, in Dortmund, Germany, at the Messe in Dortmund. We're also tracking that LA Comic Con, the big one, December 3rd through 5th, 2021, at the LA Convention Center in LA, California. And Geek Days Lily in Paris here, Lily Grand Palais in Lily, France, December 4th through the 5th. Charles, what's on your calendar?
All right, I was looking. Okay, one of yours was doubled on mine because I sent to Jim because
you're
he
right.
didn't have on the list. And now
I see Emerald
got
City.
Emerald City Comic Con marked on here twice. And
yeah, I put it
I
on the list.
That one,
I'm old
and
senile.
I
make mistakes
that
like that.
And the only reason I sent that one to Jim was the fact that I noticed one of my board gaming companies is doing demos at that convention.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
Wish I could go, but we got Oz Comic Con in Sydney, December 4th and 5th in Sydney Showgrounds, Sydney, New South Wales, Australia. Warren Comic Con, December 4th and 5th, also in Best Western Park Hotel in Warren, Ohio. Or you can go to the Canton Archon Comic Book Toy and Nostalgia Convention, December 5th at the St. George Social Center in North Canton, Ohio. You got two of them in Ohio. And then Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo, December 10th through 12th, McCormick Place, Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, yeah. And that, my friends, is our convention calendar, and I hope you guys are enjoying that. We used to read, this is how old I am, how long in the tooth I am. We used to go to Starlog Magazine's convention page to scope out where we were going to go and who we were going to see, but Starlog moved on decades ago. And so I just decided I think it'd be a good idea to let you guys know where there's local conventions in your area. So I hope you're enjoying convention calendar. And that brings us up to our Star Trek news.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Incoming transmission.
Enter authorization code.
Command codes verified.
Define parameters of program.
Level 9 authorization required.
Specify parameters.
Transfer of data is complete.
Black alert, yo. So, guys, we have a very short Star Trek news section this week. Just one quick story for each of us because we have two episodes of Prodigy to talk about and a lot of Discovery to talk about. So we're going to keep the Star Trek news brief, and then we're going to dive right into the meat and potatoes of this podcast and do some Trek talking. So I just wanted to mention, first of all, that last week we had on Kevin Guy from Riverside, Iowa, and talking about Trek Fest. And Eric has our first story, actually.
I do. Yep. Just about Trek Fest and totally related to having Kevin on last week. Money may not exist in Star Trek, but Iowa's Trek Fest does need some right now. Iowa's only starship is in need of a little TLC. Organizers of Trek Fest, the annual Star Trek celebration in Riverside, have started a GoFundMe campaign for repairs to one of the centerpieces of their festivities. The funding webpage states, after 36 years of Trek Fest, the USS Riverside, NCC 1818, and her shuttlecraft are in desperate need of dry dock. For the non-nautical people, that means repair. Like all small towns across this great nation, funding for any discretionary projects can be a challenge. The responsibility of upkeep for the USS Riverside and other assets for Trek Fest fall 100% upon the volunteer organization called the Riverside Area Community Club, RACC. While the City of Riverside does supply some financial support for events, RACC is responsible for the maintenance of assets and the actual festival operations. We do not have the manpower to do fundraising all year round. Just like you, we have homes and families to take care of, as well as other commitments to contend with, like church, school, children, jobs, and all that life stuff. Please consider our request seriously. We need your help. Riverside was officially referenced as the birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk in 2009 when it was mentioned that in that year's Star Trek film. But the city council has had unofficially claimed Kirk as the town's future favorite son since 1986. If you'd like to learn more about Trek Fest, or if you'd like to learn how you can support their repair efforts to the USS Riverside, you can go to www.trekfest.org. And it was a joy having Mr. Guy on the podcast last week. And what they call their asset, the USS Riverside NCC 1818, it's really a piece of work, man. It is a very nicely constructed ship. He told us some great stories last week about who constructed it, who designed it, a local artisan there, which is really cool. So you should go back and listen to that podcast to learn a little bit more. But I'm sure every little bit helps. So go to trekfest.org and check it out. Charles, what's your article all about?
Okay, get ready to see a lot of Kig Nataro in Star Trek Discovery Season 4. Kig Nataro is a busy woman. Throw a pandemic in the mix and things get even crazier. Worry has been that she, in the guise of Star Trek Discovery's Jet Reno, would be getting minimal screen time in the upcoming Season 4. But these concerns are unfounded. Season 4 Discovery was filmed entirely under COVID-19 protocols, and Nataro was not comfortable traveling the set, which was in Toronto. As a result, she missed much of the shooting schedule and had to backfill scenes later in production. Reno's sparring with the fellow engineer Paul Stamets is a highlight for the fans and for Anthony Rapp, who played Stamets. He admits he would love it in every episode. We are apparently not going to get to see much of Jet Reno. Rapp is sure that we are going to get enough. And Wilson Cruz, who plays Doctor Hugh Culver, went as far as to say, she's in there a lot. In the little time that we had, she really put her to work. Star Trek Discovery Season 4 premieres November 18th. You can catch up with the first three seasons, streaming on Paramount Plus, and available on DVD. And the nice thing with production, the way they do those series is now, unlike the original series, you record an episode and in a few weeks or a month or so, you release it. Whereas now we can do the whole set, so we can save certain scenes and record those scenes later. We can record scenes from episode 1, we're recording scenes from episode 4, 8, and 12, so that we can actually put the whole thing together, unlike the old way in TV, where if they weren't there, they weren't there, which I like that ability.
Mm-hmm. Building the season all at the same time.
I actually saw a movie that Kig Nataro was in, a zombie apocalypse takeover Las Vegas movie, and she played a helicopter pilot, and she had to fly these people in to Las Vegas, land on the roof, come back and get them and fly them out. And all of her scenes were all done at the same time. And she was never on set with any of the people. She never met any of the other actors, but they digitally put her into all of the scenes like they did with Trials and Tribulations. When they put Bashir and O'Brien in, they went in and they digitally popped her in to this entire movie, and she was never there. And because I'm such a fan of her from Star Trek, I had to watch this movie, which actually wasn't that good. But just to see her and how they put her in it, I was amazed at how they're able to do that. So I'm thinking with Discovery, they must have done a great job popping her into the episodes. So I'm looking forward to that myself. And guys, as always, I do Klingon stuff because that's my thing. So IDW and not only that, but it's relevant to Comic Corner. So anyways, IDW is launching an Alien Spotlight series starting with Star Trek Klingons, telling the legend of K'Les. IDW Publishing announced the release of Star Trek Klingons for February. I'm not going to buy this one. I don't think I'm interested. I'm going to pass.
Yeah.
I already have it on order, which will be the first in a series of extra-long one-shots spotlighting the franchise's many memorable alien species. Writers Jackson Lansing and Colin Key join artist Timothy Green II to tell the legend of K'Les the Unforgettable. The story of the legendary Klingon warrior and the founder of the Klingon Empire will be told, quote, from the death of his coward brother Morath to his victory at Three Turn Bridge. The Klingon people provide a rich counterpoint to the Federation. They present a lifestyle that is loud and fearless, but also incredibly egalitarian and fair. No matter who you are, respect is earned, not given. Kapla, says Kelly. And with an artist of the caliber of Timothy Green II, IDW will continue its series touting prominent Star Trek species, starting with Star Trek Ferengi and featuring the Milky Way's most cunning and avarice aliens. And that, my friends, wraps up our Star Trek news.
Star Trek
news.
It's a short section, but I have to tell you, I'm just going to interject that I'm super excited about your story, Jim, because I don't know if you ever read these or not, but like back in 2007, 2008, 2009, they did have an Alien Spotlight series, and they already did Gorn, Vulcans, Andorians, Orions, Borg, Romulans, Tribbles, Klingons, Romulans, Q, and Cardassians. So I'm very interested to see like how this series is similar and differs from that series.
Actually, I do have you're right, I do. I have a Klingon book.
Yep.
I think you're absolutely right, too.
Just one?
Just one. I have several copies throughout the house.
One that is already entitled Alien Spotlight.
So, all right, guys, it's time. It is time. We're going to be talking about Star Trek Prodigy. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. We're going to be talking about last week's episode, which was entitled Dreamcatcher. That was episode 4. And episode 5, which aired today, called Terra Firma. And
Terror.
Yeah, this is
Terror.
Yeah, not Terra as
not
in
Terra.
The Mirror Universe.
Yeah.
Terror. Like Michael Myers running around with a Captain Kirk mask type of terror. So we're going to talk about both of those episodes tonight. So give us a call, 646-668-2433, and we'll get you right on the air. We're going to take what time is it? Yeah, we will. We're going to take another quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to dive into Star Trek Prodigy. And just to put you guys in the mood, to get you pumped up, I'm going to play for you guys into this commercial break, the Star Trek Prodigy main title. Star Trek Prodigy Dreamcatcher. So basically, if you guys remember, not last week's episode, but the week before, when we graded the episode, a lot of fans gave this a poor rating last week's episode, 2 weeks ago's episode, because they thought Dah was a bit of a dink, which he was. And a lot of fans didn't like that, and that turned them off. However, I think that Dahl being the dink that he was, as I said, was very relevant to the character growth that we see in that character that we saw in last week's episode and in the one that we saw tonight. And we're going to talk about both of those. And you know what that means, guys? Before we dive in, before I forget, and before I get angry emails and people yelling at me and telling me, you know, you ruined my life because you told me about Star Trek, I have to play our Black Alert warning for you guys. So let me find it so that you are warned. Here we go.
Red Alert! Suffice to say, full spoilers follow from here on out. So if you haven't watched the episode yet, definitely go check that out first before you watch. Black Alert, y'all. We are about to make the jump to some serious spoiler territory.
All right. You have been warned. So I don't want the angry hate mail if we've ruined something for you guys. So we're going to talk about Prodigy right now. And we actually have some callers on the line, too. So let's see what we got here. Who's on the line? If this thing will work. There we go. Hey, good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talk. And what's your name and where are you calling us from tonight? Hello?
I guess you got me, Nate from Vegas.
Nate from Vegas. We got to have Nate from Vegas. How could we talk about Prodigy without Nate from Vegas?
Right. Got to have me here to make sure that things are put in place.
That's right. Absolutely. And we have another caller on the line, too. Let's see who this is. Hey, good evening. Thanks for calling Trek Talk. And what's your name and where are you calling us from tonight?
Hey, my name's David. I'm calling from Portland, Oregon.
David. We got the whole gang. We got David. We got Nate. We got Shannon. We're all here. It's going to be a good conversation. So I want to let you guys know something in advance before we – I don't want you to think we're being mean, but we went to the premiere of Discovery, which was on last night. So we got to see the first two episodes before, but Charles couldn't make it and hasn't had an opportunity to see Discovery yet. So we're going to talk about Prodigy for the next half hour. And then we're going to say goodnight to Charles. And then we're going to dive in and we're going to spoil the hell out of Discovery. And we don't want to ruin it for Charles. So we're going to let Charles go after we talk about Prodigy. So because we're going to do that, we're going to let Charles start us off with Prodigy Dreamcatcher and Terror, Terror Firma. So give us your take on it, Charles. Take it away. It's all yours.
Okay. Well, Janeway decides this ragtag crew needs to get a little more training. Come on, getting them a lot more familiar with the ship. And in the travels, she passes by a Class M planet. Yeah, did she forget to have to mention what Class M meant? I'm sure a few people probably might have gotten similar. They go, wait a minute, why would we go to a Class M? Well, for those that don't keep up with their Star Trek knowledge, Class M is usually the most habitable of the planet that people want to go. And they're like, well, we're going to get captured. Nope, you're cadets. You have to go visit the planet. Okay, we'll go visit the planet. And basically find out that this planet, we're not sure if this is actually is a planet or if this is a living being or something on this planet living. And wants to make sure they stay there by trying to keep them from leaving, trying to find the pleasure them to making them want to stay. And Terra Firma, Terra, we've Terra Prime, we finally get to get a little more detail what's going on. We find out that the Protostar has been captured. But Janeway, still, they are trying to take care of the ship. And Janeway, while protecting the ship, we get a little bit of a teaser that we don't know about. Something's taking in power. And so something, Janeway can't do her full job because something's there that she's not allowed to deal with. But we get through a very good battle scene in there, a good, very Trekky episode with Terra Prima. And that was getting me a little more on the edge of my seat, what was going to happen. We had some chase scenes, people getting caught, having to deal with all these vines. And where we think the bat, we think her father is going to capture her, is going to capture the ship. And the planet has tricked him. And they're able to get rescued. They go back and rescue her. We leave the planet, and here comes a big ship. Huge thing. Looks like a little bit the size of a Star Destroyer, as big as it was. And we get the big mystery reveal that I'm not going to mention. But I sat with that scene and was like, wow, that's so Star Trek. And yeah, I think we're on our five episode and then a break for Discovery. And it's like, okay, I'm looking forward to episode 6 of Prodigy because I want to find out more about what happened.
So what would you rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, Charles?
This was
a two-part episode, too.
Dreamcatcher ran more like about a 7. But Terror pushed it, I think, to about an 8.5. Terra really threw it up there and brought it together, and that ending was so worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Shannon's not with us yet. What about you, Nate? We'll let you jump in here next. We're doing the two as if they were one episode because they pretty much were the same story.
All right. Well, there were some comments posted on your Facebook page, and I added my 2 cents in for what that's worth. For the Dreamcatcher episode, you guys have a post. I didn't see one yet for the newest episode.
I didn't get a chance to do it yet, but I do have Discovery on there.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that one yet either. Must be way up at the top then. I scored this one a 5 because now we're talking about Dreamcatcher. I still felt that Dal was annoying to me, but not as extremely annoying as the previous episode. I have an issue of the way that there was no common sense used. Okay, you have Gwen taking over the ship, and you still have Janeway there, even if she was able to reprogram her with command codes and such. The ship has phasers on it. You get out of that situation by using your ship's phasers to cut down the routes, and you don't have it going and crashing and then like it did in the episode. I just wish there was some common sense and using of Star Trek technology to defeat the drama scene I felt that they should have poured into that. That was mainly the reason why I gave it a 5, because of things like that. Also, I had an issue with the during the captain's log, it appeared that some time took place, and that they were just treating Gwen. Yes, she was still in the brig, but I thought that in that amount of time that there would have been some sort of connection with Gwen to get her out of that brig. But that was just a side little issue. My real issue was the ship not being able to, not using the phasers to cut down those routes. But as far as the current episode went, I thought it was immensely better than Dreamcatcher, and I would also raise it to probably at least a 7. Not quite back at the 8 that I thought. And I also want to note that I no longer get the Star Wars feels. Even though you had both the villains in there, who I, again, got Star Wars feels from in the first episode, I don't get that from them anymore, so that's good. That's a positive for all the negative that I just gave you. That was a big positive for me, is that I don't feel like I'm immersed in more of a Star Wars universe than a Star Trek universe anymore.
Awesome. And how about you, David?
Hey.
What do you think?
Skip.
Well, we're talking about Dreamcatcher and the one that was on today.
Yeah, I totally forgot to watch the one about today, but I did watch last week.
Well, that's a step in the right direction.
I don't know. I'm kind of in agreement with Nate that said that there was not really any more of a Star Wars feel to it. So, I don't know. It definitely got some of the stuff that was going on. I actually liked this episode in particular because it kind of felt more Star Trek-y to me, as like a TOS episode in a way, because of the planet being alive, causing all this havoc for the people who are on there. And it was just kind of reminded me actually more of a Next Generation episode, but it was interesting. I kind of liked it. I'm trying to remember pieces of it here and there, but I'm having trouble at the moment. But I don't know. I like this, and I'm planning on watching the next episode here after this show. But not much to say. But
well, that's okay. It's okay. You joined in, and that's the cool part. So. We're all about inclusivity, so that's pretty cool. And so, like, to what Charles was saying, well, Eric, I forgot about Eric. How could I forget about Eric? Go ahead, Eric.
So there's some cool, I got to say, Nate, I pretty much agree with you relative to the first episode. I kind of was like, when are they going to bust out the phasers? And they also, at some point, they did bust out the phasers for the kids. They made a point of saying that they're all set to stun, which I think is good. It feels like Hologram Janeway would have known to use the phasers. There were a couple times in these two episodes when, as a adult Star Trek viewer, I was kind of noodling over, shouldn't they just da-da-da-da-da? And I'm guessing that they're kind of just glossing over that for whatever reason, because it's a kid's show. I don't know that that's the right move. But that being said, I love the fact that this was a two-part episode. I love the serial nature of Prodigy. You know, it's definitely like you're getting more and more information about all these characters each and every week, which I think is really fun, and it's the way that what I'll call modern Star Trek is kind of doing it, where it's more of a serial thing instead of an episodic thing. So that was cool. I really like that they brought in a vehicle. gosh, I don't remember what they called it, but the cool vehicle that Tal was driving around.
It's the Runaway.
The Runaway, there you go, yeah. Kind of reminded me, you know, only because we have one other vehicle to compare it against to the
speaking
that
of that vehicle, just to interrupt quickly, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but the shuttle that was made in the previous episode had a 06 on the side, and the Runaway has a 07 on the side. I just thought that was kind of interesting because it kind of mirrored like the old shuttles, where the old shuttles would have numbers next to them. So you have the first one being the 06 and then this one being the 07.
And I wondered if the Runaway was also a replicated vehicle or not, or if it had kind of always been there aboard the Protostar. Because last week, of course, we saw that they could just replicate vehicles in the shuttle bay, which is really cool. So, so the story kind of moved along. You know, the first episode kind of felt more like a setup. I really did like some of the scenes at the very beginning of the first episode where Janeway is explaining things like tricorders and Class M planets, like Charles was saying, and that sort of stuff to the kids, because that's the part of this show that is unique, that is introducing the younger generation to all of this Star Trek stuff. So I really did like that part of it. And then, of course, you get kind of a big cliffhanger at the end of the first episode where the shuttle crashes, Gwen looks like she's in trouble, the Protostar crashes, nobody knows where it is. So that felt like a really cool thing that they had actually just had this cliffhanger right there in a kids show, which is not something that I would normally think of having. So the second episode, I have to agree with you guys, was superior to the first. It really takes the story, turns it into a massive adventure, includes all of this really cool visual stuff and really cool stuff about the characters. Janeway's limited in what she can do, and so she's got to get her crew
spoilers.
Back. Sorry. Yeah.
No, it's okay. It's fine.
You were warned, David. And then I'm gonna, David, you may choose to put down the phone right now because I'm gonna offer a big spoiler here, which has kind of been semi spoiled in the opening credits. But we do learn why the Protostar is called the Protostar, and that it does have a very cool engine that can do some things that a normal engine cannot do. And I'll just kind of leave it semi spoiled like that. But let's just say, the good guys get away because the Protostar has what I'll say is maybe some Voyager-inspired technology. We've got some variable geometry pylons that move up and down on the ship. We got a type of drive. They don't call it the Pathfinder. What do they call it? The Path something else drive. I can't remember exactly what they call it. But what it evoked for me was that whole Pathfinder project that Barclay had set up that was, you know, able to communicate with everybody back in the Delta Quadrant and stuff. So, man, when the pylons drop and the extra engine engage and they get away from the bad guys, I was just like, yeah! That was so cool. So I really dug the overall story arc of these two episodes. The first one was a little weaker, for sure. It was more of a setup story. And so I totally validate all the things that you guys are saying about that. But the second one just knocked it out of the park for me. So I'll give the first episode about a 6, and I'll give the second one, I'll give it an 8. It had lots of cool adventure in it, and, you know, it didn't do anything too heady, but I think for a kid it would have been super exciting and fun to watch.
Well, I thought the first episode I was like, how are they going to wrap this all up in the next 3 minutes? And they did it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm glad, because if they had wrapped it up in 30 seconds, I would have given it a 0.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't. And they left it hanging, which was great because that speaks to the strength of the show. I thought it was hilarious when Dahl says, we're not going to no M class. We only go to class A planet.
A.
A. And then Janeway had to explain to him where he wanted to go. You don't want to go there. I thought that was great. I really like the character development that we're getting on the show, particularly in the second episode. And I think the second episode, to go back to what Nate said, the second episode gets Hooniwani, what's her face there, out of the brig, what the hell was her name?
Gwen
out of jail. And she has a change of heart, and which we knew was going to happen eventually. It happens in this episode, in episode 5 is when that change happens. And something else I thought was cool is they go on a Klingon ship, and they're on a Klingon ship eating gok and
playing with the Mekleth.
And I thought, oh my God, this is too cool. I loved it. I thought that was great.
Oh, and Jim, and, don't forget about the sleeper ship thing. So, talk about that because I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, when they're eating the Klingon gok and they're talking about this and that. Am I getting ahead of myself?
No.
When they're sitting there.
He actually mentioned that he was on a sleeper ship in the previous episode when he went into that hut.
Okay,
and he was having the meal there in the hut. And then in the Klingon ship, he also mentioned the sleeper ship again.
Right.
So I just didn't know if you guys had caught that either in the previous episode or this week's episode.
No, but when they were sitting there eating the gok and they were all talking about the planet makes you see what you want to see to keep you here and make you happy. And so they're all talking about what they saw and what they wanted. And when they get the Dal, and the Zero says, well, you know, he wanted to see his parents. Dal immediately says, I'm not hungry, walks away from his gok and goes down to some other part of the ship. And there's a big hole in the side of the ship. And Gwen comes down. And that's when they start to bond. And I think if this was a normal Star Trek episode, maybe he would have kissed her. I don't know, but it's a kid's show. But at any rate, they're looking at the stars. And that's when he realizes that the stars aren't moving, but the planet is, and that they can find the protostar by following the stars. And I thought that was pretty cool. So they go back and they find the ship. As far as the phasers, I distinctively remember Janeway hologram saying that she does not have access to the weapon systems. That's why she couldn't fire the phasers. But she did do something different, if you recall. She released the dots, and they went out and they phasered. Well, I don't know if they phasered, but they cleaned
they
the vines
cleaned
off.
Deep cleaning.
Yes, they cleaned all the vines off of the ship because she doesn't have access to the weapons systems. I distinctly remember her saying that.
She had access in the previous episode, though, when Gwen took her over and everything and reformatted her.
Yeah, they blasted through like an asteroid and stuff to get out of where the ship was. I mean, they definitely had phasers that worked.
Well, no. The ship has phasers, but Janeway didn't fire them. The kids fired them.
Right.
Remember the pew-pew button?
Right.
Yeah.
Janeway specifically said that she doesn't have access to the weapons systems. But what's her face? Gwen did reprogram her, so I don't know what Gwen did when he reprogrammed her, but she did make the lot.
I don't think she reprogrammed her. I think all Janeway says at that moment is she's in the middle of a sentence, and then she says, oh, you have access to all of Starfleet. So I don't think she reprogrammed Janeway at all. I think she just was able to gain access to the ship in a way that was unexpected.
Right. Okay. And, you know, the fact that Gwen told the Diviner where to find them, and the Diviner shows up there, and the pivotal scene for me is the scene when Gwen breaks her leg, and she's got that really cool sword that she can control with her brain, which is really awesome. And she takes the sword from her arm and turns it into a splint so she can walk. And I thought that was pretty cool. That was quick thinking. And when the Diviners, I forgot the guy's name, Dreadlock? Deadlock?
Well, that's the robot.
When the robot finds them, and Gwen stands up for the crew and says, you'll have to kill me. And he shoots
the cast.
Splint thing.
The sword.
Yeah. Yeah. Con 2.0.
The sword. Yeah, shoots the thing, and she can't walk now. And she's laying there, and the crew runs away, and the vines are going to kill her, and they leave her there to die. They originally left her there, but when her father shows up, the planet plays a trick on her father too. And the father has to make a choice. Are you going to save your daughter, or are you going to go after the ship? The ultimate Kobayashi Maru choice. And the father decides, I'm going to go after the ship and let my daughter die. And at that point, that's when Gwen realizes, you know, my family is not him. And then, of course, Dahl does come back and rescue her. And there we have the beginning of this, what's, you know, she's going to be a very helpful member of the crew, because if you recall in the first episode, she says that her father trained her in Starfleet protocols and operations and, you know, all that stuff. So I think she's going to be a great addition to the crew. So overall, I enjoyed both of these episodes. I enjoyed the second one better than the first one, but I think together they tell a very cohesive, entertaining story. And as a part one and a part two, I'm going to give them an 8 in my book. And so there you have it, guys. Wow. So we're getting ready to take another commercial break, guys, but we're going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery, Kobayashi Maru. The wait is over. You've been waiting through all the protocol. You've been waiting through the whole show, and now is the time. So go to your phone and dial 646-668-2433. Give us a call. We'll get you on the air. We'd love to hear what you thought about Star Trek Discovery, Kobayashi Maru. And just to get you in the mood, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to play the Discovery theme song, and when it's done, we're going to dive right in and tackle this episode. Don't touch that dial. Start off this conversation because
no, you don't.
I think that that's right.
No,
we don't. We have to say. I'm getting senile again.
You're
going to
say goodbye to your crew.
That's right. We have to
transporting off.
Yeah, we got to say goodnight to Charles, and thank you so much for joining us, Charles. And have a happy and safe Thanksgiving. And we'll be back with the entire crew the Thursday after Thanksgiving. And we'll be talking about, I don't know the title of the episode. I should know it, but I don't. The episode, well, we already saw it, but what's the name of it, Charles? Eric, anyone know? I don't know.
I don't remember. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, we'll be talking about that on the Thursday after Thanksgiving. So thank you so much for joining us, Charles, and have a very safe and very happy Thanksgiving.
You do the same.
Night, Charles.
Everyone live long and prosper.
You too, buddy.
Take it easy.
Good night, Charles.
All right. So we don't want to ruin it for Charles. That's why we're cutting him loose. So one of the things I think for me, Jeff Russo just does a fabulous job with the scores, with the soundtracks that he comes up with. And I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again right now. He knows when to go with an original piece, and he knows just when to pop in something from somebody else, but not to overdo it. Just, and there's one scene in this episode when they reopened Starfleet Academy for the first time in 150 years, and they have the first class standing in front of them. Michael Burnham's giving her introduction speech up to the president, and the president says to look out the window at the Archer Starbase, where they're going to build all their new starships and upgrade them. And what do we hear? We hear the Enterprise theme song. And for Enterprise to get the love that I think it deserves, that so many people deride it and hate it, for them to actually name it the Archer Starbase or Space Dock, whatever.
They called it a space dock, but it's really a dry dock.
Yeah, dry dock. Yeah. And they've actually played like five or six notes, not It's Been a Long Road song, but the actual Enterprise theme song. And I was like, oh my God, that got me. And the other thing that I really liked about that scene, if you watched it, is the dry dock was very reminiscent of Star Trek, the motion picture. It even had the octagon-shaped spotlights in there that were shining on the Enterprise when it was in dry dock, when Scotty flies Kirk all around every angle of the ship in the motion picture. Very, very similar to that. And I noticed that, and I was really enjoyed that they did that, an homage like that. And it was the soundtrack,
so I just
the
have
music.
To know who else got goosebumps after hearing that song.
Oh, I totally did. As soon as they go out the window and the song kicked in, I got goosebumps all over my arms. And like, it was amazing. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Jeff Russo was phenomenal. But now that I've said that, dun dun dun, I got to say a couple things that got under my skin. When the episode opens, and I've already played the Black Alert warning for spoilers that I played at the beginning for Prodigy carries on through to Discovery, by the way, because we're still talking about current episodes, so I'm not going to play that again. You've been warned. I didn't like the butterfly people.
I knew you were going to say that.
I didn't like them.
The new stormtroopers?
I didn't like. I was thinking about the white people with the side eyes and that blinked sideways in the darkness. I'm like, why would the Federation even want to meet with these people? What does this race have to offer? Why would they give them the lithium? And the whole transaction, why would she bring Book with him? He's not even an actual Federation officer. And the whole thing just didn't play well with me. I didn't like it at all. And I'm like, oh my God, I hope that it's not going to be like this. It wasn't. But the opening volley there, I didn't care for at all. So all those people that you like everything. Well, I didn't like that. Okay. And another
one. Yeah, I'm actually very surprised.
Yeah, something else that got under my skin just a tiny bit is when the president is talking to Burnham and says, well, we're going to offer you the pathfinder or the pathway, but you're not ready. And Burnham says, well, define ready. And she gives her this speech and she says, well, we're going to put this new engine on the Voyager. And I'm thinking to myself, Voyager, what about Enterprise? Okay, they keep talking about Voyager. Where is the Enterprise?
But that just ties into the Voyager series. The fact that the drive has Path in the name and they're going to put it on the Voyager, that also gave me goosebumps. That just ties into the Voyager show.
But where's the Enterprise?
Who cares?
Voyager was shown to us last season, though.
Right. We saw the Voyager already, and we already know
that
it exists.
It in action.
No, we haven't. If Voyager is on J, what Enterprise are they up to by now? X?
Double Z.
I mean, where's the Enterprise? Come on, people. Come on.
You're going to get your Enterprise on Strange New Worlds, Jim.
That's true. I will. But those are minor things. I just wanted to point them out because so many people send me hate mail that I like everything and I blah, blah, blah. Well, I didn't like those 2 points. Okay. So there you have it. I told you something I didn't like. All right. But I thought that the writers were spot on. It seemed to me like they really got together because all of the bridge crew all had stuff to do in this episode. We saw Reyes in the captain's chair. We got to see Detmer get, they all had their moment to actually do something, which was really cool. They all got promoted, which was also really cool. Poor Harry Kim has been an ensign forever until he, here she is. She's a lieutenant.
She's already a lieutenant. So,
you know, they got promoted, which I thought was pretty cool. Grudge.
But you know, Jim, she has been in the command training program for 930 years, so.
That's true. It's about time. it was great to see Grudge. I love Grudge. So that was, it was cool that we saw Grudge and that she's the queen. So that was pretty cool. And, you know, overall, I really, really enjoyed the episode. I didn't think I would by the way it started. But as it went on, it did get better from the butterfly people. I did like it. I did enjoy it. I do like the new opening credits. How they changed them up, but they seem to do that every year. They changed up the opening credits, which was pretty cool. And Starfleet Command, we got to see that funky Ferengi guy in the I forgot his name. Gronk. I forgot his name.
Yeah.
But we get
did
to
we?
See
I don't remember seeing him.
Yep, he's there. He's there. And the Federation president. What is she? Half Bajoran, half Cardassian?
She's three things. She's Cardassian, Bajoran, and human.
And I can't make up my
mind
if I like her.
I don't think they ever stated it in the episode, though.
No,
it's just the makeup that she wears. It looks like a combination of those things to me, but they never actually said it.
They've talked about it in – well, no, they didn't say it in the episode, but they talked about how that she was a mixture of three different races in some article that we read months ago. And you can definitely obviously see the Cardassian markings. You can definitely see the Bajoran markings. And then the human, I think, is just kind of like what smooths it all out, which is why her markings are so subdued.
Right. And I really like the fact that Kaminar is now being ruled by the oil slick people and the Ba'ul. They're all together now.
And the Kelpians. Yeah.
Yeah, they're all one big governing body. I thought that was, I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. And we actually got to see Kelpians that looked different than Saru, which I also thought was cool. So
which
I enjoyed
was awesome,
that.
Right? Because then that's the thing. It's just more like verification of the fact that it is not a monolithic society, just like human beings. People get it through your thick skull.
Right.
Not all Klingons look the same. Not all Kelpians look the same. Not all humans look the same. Come on.
Yeah, I thought that was great that we saw different Kelpians that weren't Saru. One guy that had a big long nose, and it was really cool to see the diversity amongst the Kelpians. And I don't know if you guys noticed or not, but Saru is the town elder. He's like, you know, revered as the elder. And they turned to him for advice, which I thought was pretty cool. He's got the elder badge that he wears and all that stuff, which was neat. He's still a captain. They also explained why the burn will never happen again, which I thought was another cool little tidbit to drop in, is when they took Sukal away from the planet, he was no longer connected to it. So even if he gets mad at someone, he's not going to blow up the whole of the world again. So that was pretty cool. I like that a lot. Overall, I did enjoy this episode. I really did. I thought it was very well done. I really liked how Michael Burnham didn't cry, and a lot of fans whine about that, but she didn't cry. And I don't know how you guys felt, but to me, she felt like a lot of Kirk in her and a dash of Picard. That's what I felt from Michael Burnham.
Her facial expressions were really, really good in this. Because I also, Jim, I will tell you that I felt those two. I even felt a little bit of Pike influence, and I felt a little bit of just like modern 21st century woman influence too. which I think was just fantastic. Like, a couple of the looks that she gave people were just like,
yeah, I was very pleased with overall. I was very happy with the whole thing. So, and before I'm going to stop and let somebody else jump in here. Nate, you want to jump in?
I guess. So for me, the episode now, unfortunately, I don't know how it was with you two, but there was a lot of lag issues while we were watching, or at least while I was watching.
Yes, there was. So, it froze several times for me.
Yeah, and I tried watching it full screen, and it was freezing, so I tried screen so we could see the chat, and it was still kind of freezing, and then it was also I couldn't type in chat, so that was a little draw down for me. So if I were to watch it again, maybe I'd enjoy it a little bit more. But for overall, I was meh over the episode, except for a couple key positives that I'm going to tell you about. So I enjoy seeing, since in all seasons for this matter, Michael being put down a peg or two. And I enjoyed seeing the president do that, putting her basically in her place. But then there was also, during their conversations aboard the ship, there were some points where I was like, Burnham actually has a point on this, Madam President, so I'll give a tick box to her. Or, for instance, the whole thing of the president questioning her aboard the ship, her command of the ship, and when she responds to it saying, when Burnham responds to it saying, are you questioning my leadership or my command, something to that effect, I don't remember exactly what she said, and the president says, a single question doesn't mean questioning, and I was like, no, actually, Madam President, it does mean you're questioning her competence aboard her ship. As much as she was putting down Burnham was scoring points back in my eyes as well against the president. And her getting put on the ship, she's the president of the Federation. She's the commander-in-chief, basically. She can go where she wants, when she wants. And obviously when she put herself onto the ship, the admiral was like, well, she's the president. She's going to go there. So when Burnham was trying to get some support from the admiral on that. So I did enjoy that back and forth between the two of them. I didn't have a problem with the butterfly people. But I will say, if they're supposed to be this have this superior technology, well, why didn't they know that their satellites were messing with the gravity of their planet so they couldn't fly straight? Because obviously somebody had to put those satellites up there. And if that species had that technology, why didn't they go up there and repair it themselves? But for me, actually right there at the end of the episode, when Book's planet gets destroyed, that I was like, oh, okay, something really interesting is going on now. So I was like, okay, this right there, that sparked more interest in the episode also for me after everything is said and done. But again, a lot of my bad feelings of the episode, or my meh feelings about the episode, probably was because of the lagging situation that they had with everything freezing while we were watching.
Oh, it was bad. It was really bad. Did you notice that Discovery has a holodeck now? It's the first time we've seen a holodeck on Discovery. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I did notice that. I don't remember if that was in that episode or the next episode, though.
Oh, did I just ruin something? Eric, help us out here.
I don't remember seeing a holodeck.
Oh, forget I said that. Ignore that. Strike that from the record. Okay.
You are violated one credit for your fined one credit for a violation of the secrecy clause.
Yep, I'm sorry. All right. Woo, got to get out of that one. David, what did you think about it?
Well, the fact that the butterfly people reminded me of, like, space vampires, I thought they were okay. You know, it's an alien race. They're supposed to be different. And, you know, even though they tried to make them as less human as they could, you know. I thought it was interesting that, you know, all these butterflies made them have, like, these wings that could allow them to fly. That was kind of interesting. But I mean, it's not really per se Star Trek, but it, you know, definitely had a sci-fi vibe to it, though. Other than that, I thought it was okay. The first episode was interesting. I kind of have to agree with Nate again about why couldn't they fix their own satellite. But let's see. Another thing is that I think that whole situation with Book's ship, every time they did it twice in that one episode. Every time it flew past the camera, it like broke up, and then the camera moved, and then it put back together again. It was just like, okay, what's the point of that? And so it was just kind of a little strange for me that they just kept doing that. And let's see, another thing is that the I thought the president was interesting. I think this was the very first female president that we've actually got to see the Federation actually have. I don't ever remember any other Star Trek series had a female president before.
Nope, you're absolutely right.
I believe Star Trek IV was the first time that we saw a president. And it was that alien with the mustache.
Yeah. Kind of half Klingon.
That's right.
Or something. But yeah, I don't know, this episode was all right. As far as the spoiler alert for the next episode.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I ruined that for you.
No, it's okay.
Oh, well.
But yeah, so I don't know. I think overall it was definitely different from the last three seasons of how Discovery handled itself and how they're putting the Federation back together. I thought it was interesting that they started with an alien planet, kind of like how you saw in Star Trek 2009, you know. Or even actually the very first episode of Discovery of season one, they started on an alien planet. So,
I don't know. So I don't want to, I don't think this is really a spoiler because it doesn't have any really relevance to any of the story. But did you guys notice the Tribble?
On the floor?
Yeah, it was
fat.
It was a giant Tribble.
Yeah, I noticed that.
At first, I thought it was a baby Horta because my screen got freeze and I wasn't sure. But then it was squeaking like a Tribble, so it had to be a Tribble. So I guess they fixed the Edward DNA problem, and now they have Tribbles on the ships. Was he a crew member or was he someone's pet? I don't know. I didn't see a uniform.
He reminded me of a mouse droid from Star Wars. Like, he was just kind of rolling the halls for no reason.
He was running away from someone's plate.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was just running around there. I did enjoy Culber, though. I really think his character, I really like what they've done with his character in particular. But, Eric, before we run out of time, it's your turn.
Man, there was a lot, I think, to like about this episode. So the butterfly people, I'll just address that at the beginning, didn't particularly bother me. Here's what I did like about that scene. I love that Book and Burnham go in with the best intentions. And because they don't really understand the culture of these people, they talk themselves into a corner and they screw up. And I think that that's one of the things that I've talked about before that newer Star Trek is doing that older Star Trek didn't necessarily do as much, or did in a funny way with like Barclay or somebody, but they're just showing how people make mistakes all the time and how they can still persevere and kind of work their way out of tricky situations. So kudos to Burnham for giving it her best, really messing it up, and then in the end kind of coming back around and making some new friends. There is a little bit of a problem that I have with this kind of like the Federation can only make friends because they have an infinite supply of dilithium to give away. So I don't know. There's a little bit too much here, take the candy and do what I say to that. So, but I don't want to deconstruct that too much on tonight's show. Needless to say, Butterfly People, I like that she eventually made friends with them. I really liked Adira in this episode, Adira, and then I think Gray actually comes in maybe at some point. But at any rate, I loved her interactions with, or their interactions with the engineering team, particularly Tilly there, and being able to solve the problems along the way. Just another great character that I can't wait to see where they take them later on in the season. I have to tell you that 2 days before I watched this premiere, my wife totally called that Burnham was going to restart Starfleet Academy. She's like, oh yeah, she's going to restart Starfleet Academy, and she's going to be like the headmistress of all of these new recruits and stuff, because they need to build it in the future and this and that. So kudos to my wife, Karen, for calling that one. So she definitely got that one right. And, but here's what I'll say. The speeches that are kind of talked about there, which we sort of touched on just a little bit. First of all, I love the Federation president. I agree with Nate. I think she is an excellent, not a foil necessarily, but just a counterpoint or maybe a mirror to Burnham. And, you know, making sure that Burnham is not being reckless Burnham all the time. She made some really, really good points to her. And I also agree with Nate in that sometimes Burnham made some really good points back to the Federation president. What I got from kind of that whole scene was that this is Star Trek kind of drawing parallels to more of what's going on in modern day society. So I think that we talked a little bit about last season, the connections of, you know, dilithium with dependence on single energy sources throughout the planet and that sort of thing, and some of the parallels there. And I think that in this episode in particular, the president talks about how they are exploring other energy sources and they are trying different things and they're developing different drives with the idea that diversification actually makes the whole gang stronger in the end, and that dilithium should not be the pivot point for an entire, you know, society or an entire movement or that kind of thing. So I really totally dug that. The station was cool. I really liked the guy Malice who ran the station. I liked that he was like, don't mess with my console. This is my station. I'm in charge. Like, that's what a station commander would be like, right? He wouldn't let somebody just come in and start doing stuff. He'd be like, no, I'm going to do it. This is my station. I'm in charge. So love that. Jim, couldn't agree with you more. I love where they're taking Culber. He is becoming a hybrid of really passionately caring doctor and counselor. Absolutely one of my favorite characters still, since the beginning of the show. I love this guy, and they just keep making him better and better. Things that I didn't like, I still hate these uniforms. I hate them, hate them, hate them. They are so ugly in my mind. All the little badges, like the little neck thing, the little things on the shoulders, hate them. I cannot. The only one that looks good to me is the medical one, and I think it's because it's on Culber, because he's a fine-looking man. and the other thing that I didn't love was the lighting was off in this episode. Did you notice how blue Vance's teeth were? It was, like, so blue, it was really distracting to me. And I feel like some of their blue screen or green screen or something caught up with them, because there was so much blue in this episode that it just kind of washed out and was actually distracting sometimes. So I give this episode a very high rating. I really, really enjoyed it overall. I'll give it an 8. For the season opener, but it was not perfect.
And Shannon, you get to bring up the caboose on Kobayashi Maru.
Well, I like the Butterfly People just because the visuals were cool. But yes, I'm getting tired of Burnham having to run off the cliff, as she said, twice. But I thought it was very funny that, you know, they then showed them Grudge. She's like, look, she's fine, even if she's a queen. But I really liked most of the stuff last season better, just because it's like, you don't start the season with blowing off his planet. I'm sorry, that doesn't work for me. So, yeah, I also don't like the suits, because they keep changing the uniforms every time, which means we have to buy new ones or make new ones. So I don't like that every season. It used to be every movie, but now it seems to be every season we need to get a new uniform.
And they wear like four different uniforms in this episode too, Shannon.
Yeah, how many different ones? Yeah, they had.
I don't know.
Yeah, at least...
last night I wore my season one Disco uniform. It's the only one I have. I'm not buying another one.
Yep.
But yeah, so I give it like a 7, just because it's not as good as last season. Yeah.
And all right, well, Eric, we always ask our Facebook fans to score the episode. And luckily, I had time to get the post. I didn't have time for Prodigy, but I did get Discovery up on our Facebook page before the show. And what did our fans have to say about Kobayashi Maru, Eric?
Well, on the scale of 1 to 10, Daniel Began gave it an 8. Gustavo Ippolito gave it a 7. Ross McLean gave it an 8. Top fan Francis Booth gave it a 5. Crystal Ann Tronball gave it a 3. Top fan Billy Covington Jr. gave us a paragraph, 10. Being a military veteran, I sometimes shake my head when I hear politicians giving their opinions on what the military should and should not be able, especially if they have never served. And so far, this is how I feel about Madam President. Not my idea of her. Now, my idea of her might change as the storyline goes on, but for now, I'm not sure. Now, I ask this question. Would any of these captains not have done the same thing as Burnham tried to do? Archer, Pike, Kirk, Spock, Picard, Riker, Sisko, Janeway, ? Good points, Billy. But glad you liked the episode with that 10. Top fan Mac McGowan gave it a 10. Kevin Beeson will be generous and give it a 7. Cale Holmes gave it a 5.5. All hail the queen. And John Sherratt said, well, seeing as you stopped everyone outside North America, oh, we talked about this, watching until some vague, uncertain time in 2022, I give it a 1. John, man, buddy, I wish I could make it different for you. We feel for our international watchers who cannot watch it right now. So, Jim, that averages out to a fan score on our page of a 6.4. So I believe that is the, I do not have the actual numbers in front of me, but my feeling is that that may be the lowest rating for a season opener for Discovery that we have seen. I feel like we're usually up in the 7s.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's the lowest one that we've had so far.
So kind of interesting. Definitely sets up, you know, maybe the anticipation was a little different for this season because we're already in the 32nd century. I'm not sure what's different. But yeah, interesting episode overall.
Well, I think it's a lot of people are upset over the Netflix thing and you know, and it shows. But again, John, we have nothing to do with it. I apologize. We touched on it at the top of the show, but we have nothing to do with it. So anyways, we made it through another show. Can you believe it?
Oh, my gosh. It's true. And we had a full house, thank you guys.
Yeah, we squeezed it all in. So I already said thank you to Charles, so I want to say thank you to David for hanging out and Trek talking with us. Thank you so much, David.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And definitely we got to say thank you to Nate. We always appreciate Nate from Vegas hanging out with us. Thank you so much, Nate.
You're welcome.
And we have to say thank you to Shannon, and we always have a chair at our table for you, Shannon. Thank you for hanging out and Trek talking with us.
Thank you, and letting me – thank you for that. Sorry, thank you for letting me come on twice today, actually.
Oh, you can come on as many times as you like, Shannon. There's no limit. And, of course, thank you so much to Eric for hanging out and Trek talking with us. Thank you, Eric.
Oh, my gosh. Good times as always. Thank you all.
And thank you to each and every one of you guys listening, no matter where you are. We really appreciate all the support that you guys give us. It means so much to us that you think that we have – all this power. It's just awesome. So thank you so much to all of you guys. I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, and I want to say to everybody, please stay safe and be good to each other. There won't be a show next Thursday because it's Thanksgiving here in the US of A, but we'll be back the following Thursday with another fun show. So as usual, hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Bye, y'all.
Good night.
Live long and prosper.
All right, then. Everybody ready?
Yes, Captain.
Yes,
let's fly.